Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Reggie McIntyre, and I am your guest host for the week for this show for the week of July 25th, 2017. Today, we are joined by our frequent guest and prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Awesome. Great. Thank you. And we are pleased to be joined by Mariah Tinger. Mariah, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Thank you. You can check out our links to most of what we will be discussing here on our blog, massclimateaction.org/blog. And then you can also find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/massclimateaction. And please share us. So, DR, it's been another week. We got even more in the news to talk about. Talk to me. What do you want to talk about tonight?
Well, it's an ugly day in the neighborhood if we're referring to what's going on Capitol Hill with the House anti-science chairman, as climate scientist Michael Mann calls him, Lamar Smith, doing a piece for the Heritage Foundation, the fossil fuel-funded Heritage Foundation, in which he goes on and on and on talking about the alleged benefits of a changing climate, as he puts it, basically, you know, saying that, you know, there's more shipping and more commerce that could occur, you know, if all the ice caps melt, and basically saying that, you know, that we should embrace the death, essentially. When he's not busy harassing climate scientists and expressing scorn for knowledge, he's just going on with these sorts of rants, and it's just, again, an embarrassment for this country.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that Smith said is that increased carbon dioxide will aid photosynthesis and increase plant growth. And the warmer temperatures will increase growing seasons. Like, it's the Shangri-La of, like, beautiful, you know, leaves everywhere. And I looked into this a lot, and, you know, this is true. This might be true in areas like Denmark and Canada, but the remainder of the world is likely to see declining agricultural returns. There are these experiments that started actually at Duke in 1994, where they bombard forests with carbon dioxide, and they study it. What does this do to the growth, the plant growth in the growing seasons? And the relationships of plants with climate are so very, very complicated. And essentially, yes, there may be some increased growth, but what you end up having is plants that are less nutritious for humans and insects, and so then the insects have to actually eat more of them. Certain species of plants will do really well, while others won't, and those species may overcrowd the others. And of course, a lot of plant matter can lead to a lot of fuel for fire. We saw with the massive, there's all these wildfires in the West that actually come from a lot of water, which increased a lot of plant growth, which then died and created tons of fuel for these wildfires to burn and burn and burn. So, you know, this from the House, the chairman of the House Science Committee, who should understand that these interactions are not myopic, there's a lot of facets to this. The main point is that rising carbon dioxide is going to have really complex effects on the interactions of plants, and to sort of say, oh, it's going to make lots more plants, it'll be great, it's just not informed. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete lack of just any – he can't be that dumb, I have to say to myself. He just can't be that stupid. I mean, clearly there's some other agenda going on here. And because you guys know, I know, the vast majority of people know that science is overwhelming, that this is happening and it's man-made, and there you go. So, clearly has an agenda. Would that be what your thinking is, DR, as well?
The agenda, of course, is placating the international fossil fuel industry, of course, which again
yes.
goes to show you, you know, it's a textbook example of skewed priorities. You know, people are elected to represent the public, not the polluters, essentially, and it's just it's just an international tragedy, I think.
Yes, yes, on all levels, just a complete and utter attack on science and on climate.
Right. I mean, you know. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
Well, the utilities, you know, we find out recently that the utilities knew in the 1970s that climate change was something to be concerned about. So it's not just Exxon that knew a long time ago, but the utilities did as well. There's a 66-page report put out by the Energy and Policy Institute that unearthed research documents and testimony published by the utilities and then sort of forgotten. So, you know, the same industry that foresaw the end of coal is now supporting all these actions to cast doubt on the science and to stave off policies to address the problem.
It's just placating their base, whoever they are, what cave these people are living in or what they are thinking, but it just adds fuel to the fire, and it's just wrong. It's just so blatantly wrong. So, I don't know. It just, it really bugs me. So I'll just say that. So do you have anything else on that you'd like to share, DR, or where do you want to go from here? What else is going on?
It's interesting, of course, Lamar Smith represents Texas, and we also know that Texas is the home of ExxonMobil, and there have been a lot of very interesting developments with regard to that company amid rumors that that former ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson, now Secretary of State, is suffering from a combination of boredom and embarrassment by virtue of the fact that, number one, the Treasury Department fined his former company $2 million for violating sanctions against Russia. And even though, obviously, ExxonMobil can pay that fine in about 30 seconds, nevertheless, it's sort of embarrassing. And number two, reportedly, Rex Tillerson is sort of horrified by the public scorn that Donald Trump is exhibiting towards Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and naturally wondering, you know, who will next be the target.
Who's next on the chopping block?
I guess he figured that that's not what he signed up for. So there are rumors that that Mr. Tillerson may consider exiting stage right, basically. And again, you know, my heart bleeds for these people. It could bring a tear to a glass eye, as they say, when these people sign up with what they've signed up with.
Right. Mm. Mariah?
It's funny to hear it called the Rexit, right? He's on his way out. I mean, he did, you know, they did ask, I saw some reporters ask him today, you know, what about these rumors? And he said, I'm not going anywhere. My relationship with the Trump is good. But obviously he's not about to say in a quick interview with the reporters how things are really going. So, so he is still saying that he's in it. But who knows?
DR or Mariah, are you able to parse it out? I mean, I read the enforcement, like the attachments from, I think it must have been Treasury that put this out. And let me ask you this. Would Exxon have been in as much trouble? Okay, so Sechin, I guess this guy Sechin was the individual. But if they had dealt with somebody other than Sechin, would they still be getting this $2 million penalty, I guess is my question. Did you read it far enough to figure that out?
From what I've read, that's a bit. It's a bit unclear. You know, obviously, you know, you would figure that ExxonMobil would be wise enough to sort of steer clear of open violations of laws. But then again, you know, I guess they probably figured that they can get away with whatever they want to get away with. And look at what they've gotten away with all these years. You know, the Exxon New campaign that revealed, as Mariah noted, how long they've known about the risks their product was doing to the planet. They may have figured that, you know, they were beyond accountability, and to be hit with the $2 million worth of accountability, even though they can easily pay it, is a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
And just to clarify for our listeners. So you're talking about the – so Exxon – let's see. Exxon made a deal with Russia with Rosneft, less than 1 month after the sanctions were in place, that the U.S. banned companies from doing business with Igor Sechin, S-E-C-H-I-N, the chief executive of Rosneft. So you were just asking, Reggie, you were clarifying whether they could have done business with some other person than the CEO, or if it was just the fact that they did business with the CEO.
Yeah.
Just to sort of clarify that.
And that's that. So that's my question. And then the other thing that occurred to me is, you know, if they did one contract, okay, that might have been a mistake. Okay, I get it. Two, okay, you had a bad moment. But they did eight. They did eight.
Yeah.
Eight
right.
of them. So tell me, they said, oops, made a mistake.
Right. And it was less than a month after the sanctions were in place.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That takes some nerve.
Mm-hmm.
That takes some real raw nerve. Anyway,
the other thing that
occurred to me is, you know, having been in, you know, on the side where, you know, where we would get contractors or companies to plead guilty. Generally speaking, they would just pay the fine and get the hell out of the news cycle. But these folks mm-hmm. clearly don't feel the need to get out of the news cycle for whatever reason. They're balking at paying this pittance of a fine. You know, that's like a second and a half of work for them on a day, you know? So
mm-hmm.
it's odd to find out what exactly it is their motivation on that, you know?
Definitely.
Mm. So interesting. So keep the good news coming to you. What's next?
Well, a bit of good news in terms of the fight against climate change that's being spread by former Vice President Al Gore, whose new movie, An Inconvenient Sequel, is being released in New York and Los Angeles on July the 28th and nationwide on August the 4th. His optimism, I must say, is much appreciated in light of some of the controversy surrounding that New York magazine piece that demonstrated so much pessimism about the ability of the United States to fight the climate crisis. There are two interesting notes about the Inconvenient Sequel. Number one is, in my view, the unintentional sabotage on the part of Paramount Pictures, which originally considered releasing the movie nationwide, similar to how Lionsgate released Fahrenheit 9/11 nationwide in 2004, but decided to go with a platform release on July the 28th, and then going national on August the 4th, which I think sort of diminishes the power that the film would have had they gone with the original nationwide release. And also another interesting story, and it's kind of borderline depressing story, I would say, by Emily Atkin in The New Republic, raising the question of whether Al Gore has sort of outlived his usefulness of the climate movement, whether he's more trouble than he's worth, whether he's too divisive of a figure. I don't think that's the case at all, but I do have to acknowledge one thing where I do think Gore has dropped the ball on one thing, and ironically enough, this does involve media. And as we've mentioned with Ted before, several years ago, and in the interest of full disclosure, I was involved with this along with my former radio colleague Betsy Rosenberg. There was an effort to try to have on Gore's channel, Current TV, an effort for them to air a nightly program dealing exclusively with the climate crisis, and the feeling was that because Current TV did not accept fossil fuel advertising, there would be no editorial limitations on such a program, and Betsy was turned down and told that the only person who was qualified to host the program was Gore himself, and he was too busy to do so. And that's a big, big dropping of the
ouch.
Ball. And you know, perhaps his only failure, but a pretty big failure in terms of media. I mean, he owned the network. He since sold it. That was another mistake. But other than that, I think Gore retains his usefulness for the climate movement.
Yeah, he's, you know, with the Climate Reality Project, he's training a lot of spokespeople for the cause, for the, you know, to get the science out there and to be megaphones for all of the information and all of the facts about climate science. So certainly he's doing great things with climate reality. And I want to see the Inconvenient Sequel, rather.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that coming. It's right. I looked it up, and apparently it's only in New Jersey right now, which I don't think I'll be driving to go see. So I'm disappointed they didn't release it nationally, as you say.
Yeah. And it's what is the good news in that movie, DR? Do you have an idea on what's the upswing that's going to make me feel good at the end of it?
the reviews point out that, you know, how close we are to solutions, how much the price of renewable energy is dropping, how this has really become a bipartisan interest in terms of reducing emissions, and basically does sound a message of hope. And Gore in his interviews promoting the film has noted that despite Trump, you know, state and local governments are pursuing clean energy aggressively.
Yeah.
And local governments are committing to, you know, honoring the tenets of the Paris Climate Accord. So, you know, it's like the audacity of hope, if you will. For one phrase.
Yeah,
I saw an interview with Thor where he said that that solar has created two times the increase in jobs as compared to coal.
Yeah.
We know coal is not creating a ton of jobs, but certainly you've got that as good news, and also that solar is growing 17 times faster than any other industry. I think I've got that right, and that's heartening as well. And as DR mentioned, we do have all of these states that are coming together with the U.S. Climate Alliance, and they now have a great website that has they just launched it, and it has all kinds of fantastic details about which states are involved, and more states keep signing on, and profiles about what they're working toward and different things like that. So it's a fantastic resource, and you can sign up for their newsletter and so forth.
And Mariah, did you say the Climate Alliance? Is that what you said?
Yeah, the United States Climate Alliance. That's what it's called, correct,
okay.
DR?
Mm-hmm.
That's
okay.
Check that out.
Right.
I will definitely check that out. Okay, well, we got to wrap it up there, DR and Mariah. That was, I hope this helps folks out for another week, that we do not have to despair. We need to keep our chin up and put our shoulder into the wind. So with that, you can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbeam, SoundCloud, and other directories. You can also find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the U.S. puts a long-term and equitable price on carbon. Thanks for being here, DR and Mariah, and thanks to everybody for listening. And see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool. All right, I better save that.